The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 8778-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Pro Football Hall of Famer and former Buffalo Bill Andre Reed. You're listening to Nate and the Fellas on Circle the Wagons podcast. Nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills. Go Bills.
Where else would you rather be than right here, right now?
Hey, hey, let's go Buffalo. Hey, hey, let's go Buffalo.
The Bills make me wanna shout.
Welcome to the Circling the Wagons podcast, a podcast discussing the Bills all year round with interviews, news, recaps, and insightful fan discussion. Most times. Here's your host and lifelong Bills fan, Nate.
Hey, what's up, Bills Mafia? Welcome to this special edition of Circling the Wagons, a Buffalo Bills fan podcast. I'm your host, Nate, and we're discussing Ken Dorsey, the former offensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills, being let go today on the day that we're recording this. It's the day after the Bills had that heartbreaking loss to the Denver Broncos. And that morning, this morning, Sean McDermott showed him the door to One Bills Drive, and he is no longer the offensive coordinator. Sean McDermott has given the job to quarterbacks coach Joe Brady. Joe Brady, who you may be familiar with, he was the offensive coordinator for the Carolina Panthers in 2020 and 2021, I believe. He was the passing game coordinator for the 2019 LSU Tigers National Championship team with Joe Burrow. So he has some experience as a play caller in the NFL, just about as much as Ken Dorsey did at this point. But thank you guys so much for joining us to discuss this. We're going to talk about our thoughts on this, reactions, what we like, what we don't like about it, what our thoughts are on the team in general, and where to go from there. But first, this episode is brought to you by the TwinSpire Sportsbook at DeLago at the DeLago Resort and Casino in Waterloo, New York, on exit 41 off Route 90. So, Mike, I'm joined by my co-host John and Mike. So this is the first time in CTW history, I think, we've ever recorded three separate nights in a row. How are you guys doing? What are your thoughts on the firing? John, I'll start with you.
Go Bills. We talked about it last night. One of the biggest problems, I thought, was Dorsey and the play calling and the scheme. And I like that they didn't let it drag on throughout the whole season before, you know, going in a different direction. Obviously, Brady's interim, so we don't know what's going to happen at the end of the season, but at least they're going to try something different here.
You forgot to tell people how you like taking joy in other people's misery, John.
John's a fan of Schadenfreude.
Loves it. Just laps it up.
It's a business, Mike.
It's a business. You know what I was thinking is I'm kind of on the edge. I'm glad he's gone. Don't get me wrong. I mean, we've been talking about this for weeks now, how the offense is predictable. They can't move the ball. Mike, real quick, your thoughts besides the fact that John loves other people's misery before I go into my thoughts.
I think he was the weakest spot on the team for the longest amount of time. However, we pinned a big, big chunk of the blame on him, but I worry. I'm hopeful. I'm super hopeful. Let's leave it at that. But
you're hopeful that this is like the fix.
This is it.
It's not a Band-Aid trying to stop an artery from bleeding out, right? Like, oh, this Band-Aid will be good enough. Like, you're hoping that this is what does it, right? How to stop the bleeding.
I guess it's in my mind, like the boss is responsible for some of the underlings issues, right? And it feels a little bit like McDermott was feeling the heat. And I don't think any of us have been impressed with his post-game, or I mean during the game, but post-game press conference in terms of accountability and admitting his own role. But like it feels a little bit like...
Scapegoating. That's...
Like, it's... Yeah.
That's kind of where I'm thinking about it. I was glad it happened, but I'm with you a little bit. Like, the timing seems a little bit weird. Like, this is the same offense that they've trotted out for, like, the last 5 weeks, right? Like, unimpressive, can't really move the ball. Nothing changed. Turning the ball over, all that stuff. And I could argue that none of the turnovers were really, you know, his fault, right? Like, I mean, Dorsey's fault, if you want to put the blame on him. Like, is Dorsey supposed to be the one? And I am not a Dorsey apologist, even though I sound completely like one right now. I sound like I'm the biggest Dorsey apologist. I'm glad he's gone in the grand scheme of things. But the timing is weird. No, that was not, it wasn't Dorsey's fault. There were 12 men on the field. You know, do I still think that they fire Dorsey after, if the Bills win that game, like they should have? You know, I don't know. But it didn't change how the offense performed. I don't know if they do fire a coordinator after the Bills win.
I don't think you can do anything after a win.
No, you can't, right? But he should have been fired this whole time. He should have been fired maybe earlier, or it just seems like a weird circumstance to me.
If it's like a scapegoating situation, wouldn't you want to like prolong as much as possible the status quo before you make the change, i.e. at the end of the year? So then it gives you even longer to have before the heat's back on you again. You know what I'm saying? He made the change sooner, so now the heat can come back on McDermott sooner if it doesn't work out or something else happens, right? So I don't necessarily think that. I think it's more so that they should have won a lot more games. The offense should have been a lot better. We've all been complaining about all the plays that they've been doing for weeks and weeks. It's just...
So you're saying, John, either way, it was the end of the line for him?
Yeah.
Wow, yeah, that was...
I don't know.
How do you follow that up? How do you follow up that fire? Oh man, that's good. I can't. I'm just gonna end the podcast right here. Mike used to do joke of the week when the Bills were terrible in that 6-10 season. We might need to bring that segment back, Mike.
But yeah, obviously turnovers, like that's a separate issue, right? And those things, and
that the, special and teams
the mistake. Well, the special teams is a whole other story, right? But the Bills need somebody else calling the plays, and so.
I mean, it was like so on the reason why you had to get rid of Ken Dorsey, which I'm glad that they did in the grand scheme of things. Again, don't agree with the timing of it necessarily, but glad it happened. Should have happened weeks ago, in my opinion, but that's fine. Is that the Bills were so predictable when it came to other teams scheming for them. Other teams that had terrible defenses, they were able to scheme around the Buffalo Bills because they were pretty predictable. Like there wasn't a whole lot that they had. That, like, you know, people would come on and say, like, when they're in this formation, they're going to do either this or this. It's like, well, do you know how easy it is to scheme in that defense? Okay, you see them in bunch formation. They're going to run these two plays, right? Like, you know, you just needed the offense to execute perfectly on every play for the Bills to have a good game. And if they didn't, then the scheme wasn't going to be able to fix it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I've complained about the shot, like empty backfield shotgun drop back all season. And the halfback runs up the middle. I mean, that got a little bit better, but you know, 2 yards, like the shotgun play handed off to the running back, right? Like up the middle and get 2 yards. It's just frustrating. They need more play action. They need more motion.
Easy things. Yeah.
I'd like to see Brady just sit down with Allen and Diggs and say, "What do you want to do?"
Yeah,
right. And work around that.
Don't you think like McDermott was a little bit more involved than we think? Like, yeah, he's doing defensive. But like, how could your boss? Like, if you were really struggling in your job, your boss just wouldn't say anything to you ever. And he'd be like, "Hey, we got to do something new." So, like, I think you'll see new things from Brady and McDermott, but it allows him to reset and pin it all on Dorsey.
Do you think he was more involved than we think he is? Like Ken Dorsey wanted to do some of the things that we just mentioned he wasn't doing, but McDermott's like, no, you have to do it this way. I mean, he might be a micromanager. He kind of seems like he might be. He definitely doesn't have the hands-off approach. It doesn't come off that way.
I agree to an extent, but I mean, there was a definitely a difference between Dable and Dorsey's schemes, right? Like it was definitely significant, I think.
Yeah, so McDermott being the constant variable there, so there is differences between the two. So yeah, okay, I can see that. But McDermott being the defensive coordinator, like we were talking about predictability, simple schematics on offense. Like as a defensive coordinator, wouldn't you be like, I know how to stop that play. Like if I know how to stop that play, then there's a possibility that the other team can, right? Like, don't you think he had some of those conversations at some point with Ken, with Dorsey? Like just to say, hey, it seems like when you're in this formation, you're going to run one of these two plays. Like, how about we switch it up a little bit? I think that falls on Dorsey on McDermott in that respect.
I agree.
Or he told him those things and Dorsey didn't do it or didn't execute that.
But how could you survive that long to go completely against?
And it's not like he even has as many years of experience as Dable did. Like, I think Dable could have pushed back on McDermott being like, listen, I've been doing this longer than you have. But like, Dorsey's literally in his first year and a half as a coordinator. He has no grounds to be like, listen, bud, you just let me do my fucking job. You do your fucking job, you know?
Yeah. Year and a half isn't very long. Like, you didn't let him go past that. And what do you guys think about the whole like Josh Allen handpicking thing? Was like how much was that really a thing? And how do you think that affects the dynamic now?
Great question. I think it was a terrible idea to let him do that. Hindsight being 2020.
Worse.
Yeah. I mean, obviously McDermott and like he's got to agree to it right himself and feel comfortable with it. So it's not just like Allen picked it, so okay, I gotta let him do it. But I wonder how that might affect things now. Like, the guy I picked got fired. So,
so a couple of things on that. I think Josh Allen is a very emotional person, right? Like he comes off that way as like high highs, low lows. Like he's very in the moment. He's not one of those guys that would ever be a good poker player because he does not hide his emotions whatsoever. Right? Like he's that guy, right? Like we can agree on that. So like, I think in general, the kind of person he is he's a very emotional person in a lot of things. So when it comes to, like he said on multiple occasions that he loved Brian Dable when he was here. It's like, I love Dabes. He's my guy. I understand if he has to leave, but I definitely want him here. Like he loved Brian Dable. Like Brian Dable helped him to be who he is right now as a quarterback, right? Or he helped him get to this point in his career. So I think that Josh was looking at it from an emotional standpoint when he wanted Ken Dorsey. He's like, I just lost a guy that was really important in my growth as a quarterback. That really sucks to lose him. Who's the next closest thing? It's kind of like a safety blanket, like it's Linus in the blanket, right? Like I don't want to lose everything. I want to hang on to something, right? And I don't want something completely new to me because I don't like that idea. I don't like that idea. It scares me. I want to stay in my comfort zone when really, in reality, it's okay to be outside your comfort zone because he started off outside his comfort zone when Dable got there, right? Like that was brand new. Like those things are okay. And I think this was a lesson learned. Like sometimes you have to go through some pains to get to a better spot as opposed to, yeah, I know Ken. I've worked with him for 2 years. I think he would be a good, like, and also to that point too, Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean, like, before Dorsey was even named coordinator, Josh Allen said at press conferences he wanted Ken Dorsey as a coordinator. So how bad would that look if McDermott and Bean, you know, hired Eric Bieniemy? Like it would have been great for us, but it would have looked bad for Josh. Oh, they're not giving Josh who he wants. So a lot of different optics on that level.
Well, we've definitely seen, I think this year, a narrowing of the quarterback skill. Like, we all thought he was top three coming into the year, and just the turnovers are incredibly problematic. But to like, and definitely shown the first 5 years, incredible improvement year to year. But back then, the story was how he was constantly grinding. Like in the off season, all he was doing was training with Jordan Palmer, like running in sand, working on his footwork. And now, like the story is how his like doesn't care what he eats, plays golf, right? Like it doesn't, I'd like to see him get back to the point of being more dedicated, I guess. But, and I don't know if this is something you can get to, but like the guys we grew up watching, like that were elite for a decade, or were a little bit more cerebral, I think, like Brady and Peyton Manning. I would say Mahomes is in that, like eat, sleep, drink, watching film. And Josh is like more athletically gifted than all those guys, I think. But football, it is now to such a cerebral game. Like I hope they can get somebody in there that...
that can get him back on point.
Because right now he's like, it's almost like we loved watching Favre, but I don't think I could lump Favre in, like the gunslinger mentality, throwing it on a line, right? Like I wouldn't lump him in with the cerebral nature of Peyton Manning or Tom Brady or even like just not watching film is like throwing the ball around with the boys in his dungarees, right? And like I don't
his Wrangler jeans.
And I guess that goes into the bigger thing of like Madden and dating Hollywood starlets and all this stuff, but like
maybe this is a wake up call. Mike, we were just talking about optics for, you know, Josh Allen choosing his own offensive coordinator. The optics for his dedication to the game. Now, I agree with everything you just said there. Like, it all makes complete sense. We have no idea. We're not there behind the scenes. But you're right. Like, when Stephon Diggs first came, we all remember how he brought all the wide receivers out to him in California, or they met in Florida or wherever, and they all had a big passing session. Didn't hear anything about that this last offseason. Not that I remember. I definitely know, though, that Josh broke up with his girlfriend and he's dating a Hollywood starlet. Like you said, he's dating a celebrity actress. Okay, cool. That's fine. Well, he's in a ton of commercials now. That's okay. Awesome. Great. How about his dedication to the game? Like, the only thing that we know about Josh's true dedication to the game, because it ain't his diet. Like you said, he basically came out and admitted, I don't do shit in the off season to try to like limit my weight. I just come in, which is not what you see, because I think we've said this before in the podcast, is you always exaggerate less than what it truly is. So like, if he says he doesn't really care, he truly does not care. like it's like, you know, I don't care as much. Maybe he kind of sugarcoat a little bit. You know, I eat a little bit more wings, beer. I mean, I'd be surprised if he's not rolling out at noon every day, you know, picking up whatever, you know, is left over from, you know, the pizza party the night before, right? Like I get that sort of hair of the dog sort of thing, right? Like I definitely don't get the sense that he's as dedicated as he ever has been, and maybe that's not fair because of his performance this season. But
yeah, I mean, speaking of performance, like we can't just cite turnovers and ignore that he's still tied for passing touchdowns. He's top four for rushing touchdowns. He's top three for passing completion percentage. Like he's still, aside from those the turnover, he's still doing good otherwise. And some of those turnovers, like Gabe Davis right through the hands. Like, and that's not the first time this happened this season. So, I don't know.
It sounds like you're, like, I hate even having the conversation. And I take no joy in Ken Dorsey's firing, even though we think that's what it needs. Because, like, in some level, we're like, oh, yeah, it's a business. But also, it's like, this is the team for the year. It's like a snapshot in time. You want everyone to succeed. And, like, it's one big family. I just hate to crack on Josh at all. But,
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the other thing, too. Like, let's say you're evaluating the whole team and, like, somebody decides that Josh Allen's the problem, right? Forget about the contract and everything, right? He's still a top three or five quarterback. Like, who are you going to replace
those
him with?
Those turnovers, though, absolutely kill them.
That was easily the reason why they lost.
I mean, they could sign Carson Wentz if you want. I mean,
I agree with both of what you're saying. He's still a top three, top five quarterback.
I'm not saying get rid of him. I'm just, I guess I'm questioning.
But yeah, he killed them yesterday.
Is he doing his homework?
Dude, did you guys see, I didn't watch till this morning because we were recording the podcast last night. Did you guys see Josh Allen's presser at all? They brought Mitch Morse in with him, which I don't watch every presser. I don't remember Mitch Morse ever being there with him when he was fielding questions. Dude, he looked absolutely, like when I said earlier that he wears his emotions on his sleeve, he looked like you just told him his childhood dog died. His childhood dog was just hit by a car, and he had to come out and do a press conference about football right after. Like he's just like, gotta play better. And
if he wasn't putting in the work, he wouldn't look and feel like that. Like he wouldn't care if he wasn't putting in the work, right? Like, ah, whatever, we lost.
Maybe it finally caught up with him and he realized, oh, wow, you know, there's consequences for my, I don't know.
Maybe he's taking acting classes. Who the hell knows? How do you know? I feel like I could look sad really well.
Let's see it. Let's see it. Just Mike, we're going to ask you some questions about the podcast last night and your underperforming, your performance not being up to par. And let's see how you can answer him. Okay. Okay. Just pretend like he's already doing it. He's already in character. I can tell. Method actor that Mike is. Okay, Mike, last night's performance of the podcast, you said some things that you probably wish you could take back right now. What do you take away from that poor performance?
I know we can do better. It's just really fresh right now. We put a lot of work in. I know we're gonna have to do more.
And then just trail off. That's good. That's good. Don't actually finish the sentence. This is the most down I've seen Mike in years. Oh, there he is. There's a big...
Out of the corner of my eye, I see John like fiddling with something.
John's holding damn.
I've only seen a puppet like that on like Law and Order SVU.
He's got this whole time, so you guys can't see this because we're not recording it on YouTube, but John's holding up Dapper Dan, his Dapper Dan doll, the whole time while Mike's trying to answer it. Well done, John. All they need that. Could you imagine if there was like a guy in the back of the presser trying to make Josh laugh the whole time? Like a little, like a mime in the background. Like, oh, what do you think about the disappointing, you know, performance, Josh? And you see like a guy in the background just trying to make a box with his hands. He's stuck in a box. Josh like smiles a little bit. He's like, that's good. Anyway, yeah. Oh, now he's on a rope.
I don't think any like.
Ask me a question. I want to see if I can do it. Ask me a question. I'll try to do my impression of Josh, or just anyone that's trying to be upset.
Do you think you are hosting to your full potential?
You know, it all comes down to just execution. It's just execution. that's on me and the rest of the team. But it all comes down to me, and I let this team down. Was that convincing at all?
I think Mike was distracted.
It was real good.
See, you could enjoy.
But you covered your whole face.
Well, I covered. I was just trying to cover my eyes so I wouldn't see John fiddling with that doll the whole time.
Fiddling, I think, is the
correct terminology. Wearing the doll, John. Yeah, does this solve anything? I don't know. I mean, it can't be. I like the idea. So, John, we were talking about this.
But irrespective of, like whether I studied for 5 minutes before the game or studied for 40 hours in addition to my 40-hour practice week, like I can still look sad because I let down 80,000, 75,000 people there and millions across the world. Like, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, people don't like you.
I don't know if that's a true barometer. Yeah.
It's easy to be upset when people don't like you and what you're doing. It's very easy. So you're right. That's not a true barometer. Okay. That was just a fun exercise. Let's see if we can do it. I think we could both be actors if we're laying it all on
no
that.
No question.
John, you could be a good mime.
Yeah, I could. I definitely couldn't do it. I'm more like Josh, emotions on the sleeve, you know.
Can I ask you a question? Do you want me to do you? Because I haven't asked you one.
I wouldn't be able to fake it.
You wouldn't be able to fake it? Okay. All right.
No.
I think he's more enamored comparing himself to Alan.
He's like, I'm just like Alan. Tall, good-looking, young. Athletic as F, you know, right?
More or less.
Loves eating pizza.
I don't care what I eat.
He's like, I'm 100% Josh Allen. Yeah, golfing the whole time, the match, all those things. Like, I imagine that that's what it's like. So, I mean, we never talk about these things. Like, we don't talk about the human element of a lot of these players. But with Josh, you kind of saw, like, firsthand him going from, we didn't follow him from JUCO, but, like, a junior college to Wyoming to getting drafted. He's like a farm boy that grew up to be a celebrity. Like, there's got to be, you know, ebbs and flows with that sort of, you know, rise in stardom, right? And I think he's seeing that, and I'm sure it's probably tough to deal with, you know, this and that. But I could easily see that being an issue that he's dealing with that we're kind of seeing firsthand.
I don't understand what you mean.
So, like, I mean, there's just a lot of things to take in. His lifestyle has completely changed from, like, being a nobody to trying.
It's year six, though, right? I mean,
but like, he hasn't been a celebrity for more than a year or two, if that, right? Like, he hasn't. Not everyone in the world knows who he is until he was on national commercials.
First round.
Yeah, lots of guys. Josh Rosen was drafted first round. Nobody knows who he is anymore, right? Like, I mean,
you were the first. He was the first name you came up with.
Well, I mean,
but yeah, point taken, I guess.
That's fair. but like he met cover of Madden, like he went from, you know, making the playoffs and being an NFL, like people know who he is, to like being, I guess you wouldn't say worldwide celebrity, but like a national celebrity. Like everyone knows he's one of the two top three or four quarterbacks in the NFL that everyone knows who he is. I think if you show everyone a picture of Josh Allen in the country, I think a lot of people know him just because of the commercials, if nothing else, right? I know that guy. He's on the Verizon commercial. He's on the Gillette commercial. He's on the Tostitos commercial. He's on the whatever commercial. You're like, who's Trevor Lawrence? And if you're not from Jacksonville or you don't follow the NFL, you'd be like, who's that guy with the long hair? You know, in the middle of Nebraska, they're like, who the hell is that? Right? So, and Baker Mayfield, I mean, people know who Baker is because of those damn State Farm commercials. So anyway.
So you're saying now he got... Too big.
So he's, I think it's just a lot to deal with in a short amount of time of like being, you know, he was dating, he was, you know, a starting alpha quarterback. He was dating his high school sweetheart. And then he went from that to being the cover of Madden. He's dating a Hollywood starlet. Like you said, he's like running in groups that he's probably never run in before. Famous TikTokers and YouTubers and things I don't know about. Sound old just saying it, like Twitch streamers. So he's adjusting to it, and I think we're seeing the adjustment live. And I think things are suffering because of it. I think it's a lot to say, but kind of goes to your point where you were saying earlier about golf and everything going on in his life. I think the stardom thing.
I think that's a distraction thing than a
growing pain.
Yeah. I mean, what you're describing is the plot of like every third Rocky movie. Now you got too big.
Yeah.
You can't be trained. You can't beat him, Rock.
You lost your edge, Rock.
It's like Rocky 3, Rocky 6, Rocky 9.
Yeah, and we're
Creed 3.
Yeah, and we're in Creed 3. We're in Rocky 3 right now. This is that season. And then what happens in Rocky 4? Mike, tell us what happens in Rocky 4. Does he get his edge back?
He gets it back. He has to bottom out. The Siberian wilderness.
He has to bottom out, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to hit rock bottom. I'd say that Josh is close to rock bottom.
So this is the rock bottom or the season is? Because if this is the rock bottom, then we should got to see if we can bet on a 7-game win streak.
No, I think it...
Get us into the playoffs.
I think they...
So you don't think the bottom's hit?
No. I think it could still... I think this could continue into the off season. You know, and then... You know, Haley Steinfeld breaks up with them, and then all of a sudden, what else happens in like those
injury?
Yes, injury. Yep, exactly. He has to rehab
drugs,
something.
Alcohol,
drugs. Oh yeah, for sure. So many different plot lines. His best friend dies in a freak box.
Vicodin got Favre, right?
That's right. It did. Jeez.
I was thinking they would just go 12-5.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you didn't, Jeff. Did you think that today after they fired him? Because you definitely didn't say that in the podcast last night.
I mean, they could.
Definitely.
I think I would be surprised if they don't.
Big revenge game next week, right? Eagles.
In Buffalo.
Eagles are beatable. Then they get the bye before the Chiefs, and the Chiefs look beatable.
Well, that's a good thing is the Jets can't game plan for this offense because the Bills don't even know what offense they're running. So there's no.
And then you got Dallas. Dallas sucks. Just want to point that out. For anybody listening. And then
not according to Trayvon Diggs. Trayvon Diggs who was saying that Stephon Diggs needs to get out of there. Like, okay, Trayvon. We'll see when the Cowboys lose in the divisional round again or the wild card like they always do.
He's on IR anyway, isn't he?
Easy is, yeah.
Yeah. The Bills got this. We got this. I believe.
I'm excited to see what he can do. I mentioned on the podcast earlier this week that I wanted them, if they were to get rid of Dorsey, do it mid-season instead of waiting to the end of the season. Because that way, at least you get a few games of Joe Brady. I doubt it's going to go well. He didn't have good numbers in Carolina. But then again, you know, Dable didn't have any good numbers whatsoever until he came to Buffalo and had Josh Allen as his quarterback, right? So
the Joe Brady thing, like, yeah, hopefully he's great. But I kind of wish they had somebody
better.
They could. He might be amazing. He might be amazing. It reminds me of a story about LeBron, though, when he went to Cleveland. And, like, he didn't like Spoelstra because Spoelstra was, like, a young head coach. And LeBron thought he knew more than Eric Spoelstra, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and if Spoelstra said, oh, we're, you pass in this situation or you do this, LeBron didn't like it because he thought he was the alpha dog. So, like, it was some game where LeBron, like, on his way out to the floor, like, put his shoulder down into Spoelstra. So Spoelstra had to, like, take him up to the office, and when it settles down after the game, like, take him up to the office and put Pat Riley as the GM, put Pat Riley's number on the chalkboard and be like, fucking call him. Like, it's you or me. If you don't think I run the team, there's a fucking number. So, like, you need somebody that is not best friends with Allen, I would say. Right. Like, I like your point about what do you see? What do you think? But at some point it's like, hey, do this.
Yeah. He seems like he needs that sort of guy, like a Dable. Like, Dable's like, this is what you do in this situation. Like, he needs that. Mike, you were just mentioning last week that Allen does not come across, you just mentioned like film study or whatever, but like, he does not come across as a guy that's just like looking at the tablet as soon as he gets off the sidelines, talking with the OC. What did you see on this one? Going to his players, you know, let's look at this next time when they do this slide protection, whatever. Like, he does not, at least, you know, we can't tell from the media perspective, but doesn't appear that way. So he doesn't need a buddy with him. He needs a guy that's going to tell him with confidence, this is what you're doing, and you follow me, and you're going to succeed. Not like, let's give this a shot, you know? Or maybe, who knows, maybe Ken Dorsey was taking too much of what Josh Allen said. Maybe Josh is like, this is what I like. And Dorsey's like, that's not creative enough. He's like, I don't care. It's going to work. Trust me, I'm Josh Allen. Like, okay. Whereas Dable would be like, no, you're fucking 25 years old. You don't know shit. You know, I'm going to show you. I've won a national championship. I've been a coordinator for 7 years in the NFL. I've worked with the Patriots for 3 rings. You don't know it. I know it, right?
I think it's got to be more collaborative. Like, if Allen's like, I really like this, and the coordinator's like, that's a good idea. Why don't we do this instead because of this?
It sounds like you're talking to a child at that point, like a toddler. Right? The toddler's like, I want to watch TV, or instead, we could play with
your pet. Yeah.
But it goes both ways, too. Like, Allen could be like, hey, I see this when I play the Patriots, right? I see this a lot. And Diggs is probably in the room, too, talking, right? The corner's like, all right, that's great. Well, why don't we do that then when we're in that situation? So, like, you know, that collaborativeness of it, I think, would be good. And I don't know how much there is of that across the NFL. I don't know how any of that works.
Nate and I know. And it's shades of gray.
Well,
it's everything you said, and at the same time, nothing of what you said. And that's how I'll leave that, for sure. 100%, none of the time.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
We are in agreement that we should let him run more, right? Like, I'm not of the, like, hey, just get injured, but...
It is funny, because a couple years ago, like, he's got to stop running.
Stop running. Why is he running so much? Oh, my God, do you want to get injured? And now I'm like, please, just throw him at the defensive line. I don't care.
We need more hurdles.
It's 4th and 2. It's right there.
Whatever happened to the tush push? Why'd they stop doing that? The Eagles did it nonstop. The Bills are like, that was working really well. No. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this. So, I mean, I'm excited to see what Joe Brady does. I don't have a ton of confidence that it's going to be great, but.
I mean, in 6 days, you're not going to like change everything, right? So we're not going to see like a night and day thing between now and the Jets game. But he can certainly like make minor changes and tweaks and such, and maybe that'll help. I don't know.
I think it turns the whole season around.
I hope so. I'm optimistic.
I mean, if you're a betting man, the Bills were, what, 6.5-point favorites against the Jets? I mean, this kind of feels like a – this could be like a Raiders-like game. Like when the Raiders, you know, canned Josh McDaniels, they were on fire the next week, right? They destroyed the Giants. I mean, they're the Giants, but they beat them better than the Bills did. It was like the guys were smoking cigars in the locker room, right? Like, this could be that way. And even, you know, I don't know. It does feel weird, though, rooting for people to – lose their livelihood, right? Like this is one of those things. We haven't talked about this. So we've been doing this podcast for 7 years. The only other time we talked about this was in the second, going into our second year of podcasting when Rick Dennison was fired. That's really the only time we've.
Who?
Yeah, exactly. It's been 6 years since we've talked about a firing on Circling the Wagons because Leslie Frazier was just, you know, randomly let go or he was seeking a new opportunity or some shit. Like there's no real explanation. He just left. And that was the, and Dable went to go for a head coaching gig. So they've never fired, like truly fired a coordinator like this, especially midseason. This is a big deal. It feels weird though, rooting for people to like just the human aspect of it. I understand it had to happen. I'm glad it's happened. But at the same time, I'm like, oh, it's kind of sad, right?
Like we talk about it all off season. We're like, oh, they should cut this guy, right? They should bring in this guy because this guy sucks. We do it all the time.
It feels weird playing. It feels like playing God. That guy doesn't deserve to make any more money. This guy does. This guy should continue to make money, maybe even more money.
Well, it's good that we don't make any actual decisions.
Yeah, that's the best part of this. Does anyone want to talk? So last time we did this, we talked about like, it reminded me of that Rick Dennison episode because we talked about like losing jobs or being fired. Have you guys ever been fired from something? Specifically fired for... I don't think so, right? Let go is something different, like layoffs. Like I've been laid off before, like downsizing. But I don't think I've ever specifically been. I would have known by that. I would be like, huh? Let me see. Has someone ever sat me down and said, "Nate, this is your last day because you're underperforming"? That has not happened. Mm-mm. Can I tell you a story where it almost happened? I got the feeling like it was going to happen. You guys want to hear that story? I almost got fired. I was this close. I was thinking about it on the drive home today after the news of Ken Dorsey. And so there was, I was just talking about being downsized. One of my first jobs out of college was a recruiter, which is just like a nice way of saying a headhunter, right? Like you just try to find jobs for people and you make a commission off the sale. It's like the job version of a realtor, right? Like realtors just showing houses. I'm just showing other prospective clients jobs, like, you know, just trying to hopefully someone, you know, buys a house or lands a job and I make a commission, right? Like that's, and when I first joined this one company, they're like, you're going to make $100,000, Nate, like just do exactly what we tell you. And I was like, this is not the case. this is not what you told me it would be. Oh, well, you have to work really hard. Be like, I shouldn't have to work. If I could work 70 hours a week anywhere and eventually make $100,000 if I take on two jobs or whatever. But regardless, it did not work out. I left that job for like this startup company. So the startup company, which I knew the risk going into it, any startup company.
Wait, so that one you just left?
That one I left. So that kind of, you'll understand why this leads into the other job, okay? So then I left the recruiting job to go to work at a startup company. And the startup company was a really cool idea. You know, I was into it. And then, like, it went belly up and they laid off half their employees, like, 2 or 3 months after I started. Great timing, right? Real quick story on that. One of our good friends... Which I will.
Is this the one?
No. One of our good friends that you guys both know, or a friend, maybe not good friends, a friend, who worked at that same.
What's his name?
Schmiss.
What's it sound like?
Schmiss. Schmiss Schmark Mies.
Does it? Could it also be Schmistifer?
Yes, it could be Schmistifer.
Okay.
So he was working at that job with me, and as I was driving off the property, half the people are getting their pink slips, right? And he's just like, dude, I heard you got let go. And I'm driving out thinking like, what the hell am I going to do? I don't have a job, right? Like, how do I do insurance? I was like, you know, luckily I was only like 23, but I was like, you know, what do I do for insurance? How do I find a new job? I haven't been looking this whole time. And he's like, yeah, he's like, it's crazy. He's like, I don't know what I'm going to do if I lose my job. And I'm just like, oh, you mean the thing that just fucking happened to me? Schmistifer? Like, you just didn't. He's just like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, geez, I hope that doesn't happen to you because that would be awful. No, it was just, we love him. It's just the way he is. It's just the way he is. So anyway, I'm in the process of looking for another job and another recruiting gig in town.
Did the company eventually?
Yeah, they went under completely. Eventually, that person did get let go from their job, too.
And then you rejoiced.
Then I rejoiced. I'm like, hey, you should have been ready for it. You knew it could come at any moment. Weren't prepping for that one. So I got another job as a recruiter. It's kind of like a, I knew I didn't want this job, but I'm like, hey, I can make some money, decent money, as opposed
Wait,
to like,
I thought this was the first one.
This is, so I had two recruiting jobs. This is the second one. The first one I left, and then I got laid off. So this is the third one, or second job out of three, second recruiting job. And okay. I'm there.
I failed to see how all these others were pertinent to this.
Okay, so at this job, one of the reasons they hired me is because I worked for the other recruiter, and they're like, oh, these guys like cold call guys, because that's what supposedly what we were known for, just calling random people up that we knew were like in this job, and we'd be like, hey, like, are you interested? We would get guys that way. So it didn't mean that we didn't like work on like the job boards, which is basically like people that are applying to monster.com or Yahoo Jobs or whatever at the time. Indeed was one. Like, you would also get those resumes, but like you would also try to find like the not so easy clients, like, and LinkedIn was just starting then. So like you were finding, you know, applicants that way, like you were able to kind of talk to them that way. So it was a really, I probably did like 10 to 20% of cold calling, but I did a lot of job board stuff. So people in that industry are like, people that put their names on job boards aren't really what, you know, the clients want, because, you know, they're looking
they
for jobs.
Just get them, right?
Yeah, they're exactly. They could just get them. They're job searching everywhere. They don't care. Like, whereas if you call somebody who's at their desk and you're like, hey, do you want this awesome job? And they're like, sure, I'm not looking. Then you know that you're not competing as an employer. You're not competing with, you know, Google. You're not competing with Cisco. You're not competing with, you know, Yahoo, Facebook, all those guys. I don't know why Yahoo is lumped into that. They're like bankrupt, but you know what I mean? Like Facebook, Google, all those places, right? That's the one guy who's just interviewing. So that was fun. Except when I went to this new job, like they would give me jobs. It's like, okay, we're looking for this kind of guy. And the guy I was working with, like, already did all the easy stuff. Like, at that point, he had gone through all the job boards. He had contacted all the people. He had set up all the interviews. And he's like, here you go. Now you can do some cold calling. And I'm like, fuck that, dude. Like, that is so much more work. And you've already got people interviewing for it. So, like, I could get a guy that's perfect, but they might still pick one of your three or four guys that you already have in the queue. So, like, let's just say I was not trying that hard at this job, right? like you could make sales. But like the base salary was pretty good. So like commission would have been okay too, but it wasn't the same as the old job. So I was very much coasting while I was interviewing for other jobs that I wanted to do outside of recruiting. So eventually like the manager calls me in. He's like, oh, hey, how's it going? I see you don't really have any leads for this one. He's like, yeah, you know, I'm looking, this and that. It's kind of tough when, you know, so-and-so already has, you know, people in the queue and he's kind of done already the work, right? Yeah. Yeah, we're just going to need you to step it up a little bit or whatever, he said, some manager bullshit. And I did not step it up. I remember he said at one meeting, you know, where we get together as a group of like 10 people, this job. He's like, oh, do you have anyone for this job? I'm like, no, not yet. I think he was expecting me to say it. And at that point, I was just totally checked out. Like, I'm just like, nope. Oh, okay. Like, all right. Like I was probably this close to being fired because I was doing very little work to get the job. But I knew I was like interviewing. It's funny. As soon as I took this job, I already had like two or three interviews for like another job that I actually wanted. So like you're just basically biding time. I think I was there for maybe 2 months, maybe 3 months. So like that, I'm just like biding time. I'm like, you can let go of me. Like eventually one of these is going to land. Right. So, but yeah, I was almost fired. I was this close. I didn't pull a Ken Dorsey. I feel like Ken Dorsey was still trying. But for me, I was just like, but yeah.
So in truth, you've never actually been fired.
No, I think I was on my way. Is that what it takes like for you to just give up completely to get fired? I mean, I showed up every day, so they're probably like, he's trying, but I've never actually tried to get fired. Maybe it takes a lot.
I feel like it was a standoff. Because if they fire you, they probably have to give you unemployment, right? Whereas hoping you just leave.
Yeah. You think some companies are doing that? They just try to bully you out of...
Was you were kind of on commission, right? So they figured maybe, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Remember when George tried to get fired, Seinfeld?
No, what happened?
He was like dragging the trophies around like the parking lot with his car. And, and like he's like wearing like old players like uniforms and getting like stuff on it. And
what did he do? Did he get promoted?
I feel like that's what happened. I can't really remember, but I feel like he got promoted or something. Or
was that the
he
same?
He couldn't get fired. Yeah, because he wanted to go, like somebody else wanted to hire him, but like because of some sort of issue, he needed to get fired from the Yankees first.
Oh, to like breach his contract or whatever to stop his.
Yeah.
This wasn't the same episode where he like talked to the woman in the restaurant and Lane's like, she's looking at you. He's like, what? I don't have a job. He's like, I live with my parents. What am I going to do? She's like, just. And Jerry's like, just do the opposite of what you would normally do because that doesn't work. What you've been doing hasn't been working.
She's like, hi, I'm Veronica.
George hasn't shaved in days. He looked like Mike on No Shave November.
I feel like that whole story should have been leading up to you
getting fired.
But the boss comes in and says, you're terminated.
Dude, you were.
That would have been awesome.
Dude, you were on straight fire tonight. Candid and terminated. He just like the manager does that in front of like the bullpen in front of everyone, and then he just takes a like a bow. Everyone's like, "Oh shit!" Like, and then like I just pack up my shit and leave. Like I just, that would have been funny. It'd have been devastating to me, but funny, funny in a movie. So yeah, it was like that. It's like that Ari clip from. Yeah, Ari Gold clip from Entourage. He's like, oh, great. He's like, can you read this? Because he just got LASIK. The going guy just got LASIK or something, right? He's just, and he wrote on the big whiteboard, get the fuck out. See that? He's like, and in case your eyes are fucked, let me say it loudly. In case your ears are fucked. Oh, it's funny. I posted that on several social media sites, but anyway. Any last thoughts on this? I feel like we covered a lot.
I'm super optimistic. Hate to see somebody, just to sum it up, like I think we're all on the same page. Like we hate to see something happen to somebody on the Bills, but this could completely galvanize the team and they could do a 180. Like I'm super optimistic.
Real?
Maybe it lights a fire under the whole team and gives Brady a chance to really show what he can do.
Real quick, do you think Sean McDermott can be on the hot seat also, depending on how this season plays out? Like, contract extensions aside, like, let's pretend like that's not an issue. Like, it's just a matter of performance. Will they keep him or not keep him? Do you see a scenario where they're just like, McDermott has to go at the end of the season? Like, they lose out or something? I mean, I don't see that happening, but what scenario would McDermott be on the same seat where we could potentially see a changeover over the offseason?
I don't think he leaves.
I think he gets another year, no matter
definitely
what.
Definitely a year.
And then at the end of that year, we'll see.
So you see maybe.
But I think the narrative is changing. Like the luster is off of him as a head coach. I think he's still viewed very positively given the injuries as a defensive coach. But it seems like the job of head coach, like it's changing. Like, hey, he would be an amazing defensive coordinator, but the job of doing everything. Like the Bills have had some absolutely brutal losses at the end of games, and like him trying to do the defense and steer the whole ship, like it's too big for him. The moments are too big. Like he's not a clutch coach, cannot win those games.
Would you say the luster? So like it feels like with this firing, the spotlight now is on McDermott, right? Like he's under a microscope starting now, right? Like. But the luster, like, that kind of wore off after, like, the 13 seconds game, right? Like, does it feel like that ever since then, it feels like, oh, well, maybe he's not the guy, you know? And I feel like he has improved it since the 13 seconds game where you'd be like, okay, he really is. He's a lot better. He just made a mistake, you know?
I think he gets a ton of credit for ending the drought and still had enough goodwill built up. And it seemed like but for those 13 seconds, that was their Super Bowl year. And it's like, oh, we're bringing the band back together again. Let's make a run. And it's just getting worse.
I mean, they've also won the division several years in a row. So, like, he can't.
They made the playoffs, right? Is it 4 or 5?
Right.
So
he's been here 7 years. He's made it 5 out of 6 years.
5 of 6.
5 of 7 if they don't make it this year, but yeah, 5 of 6. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot.
They're going to win out, so like they'll make the playoffs easily and probably win the division at 12 and 5. I would think.
What do you think about him being a defensive-minded head coach? Because I was thinking that doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things, but I mean, in thinking about it though, if you have like a really good offensive coordinator, if you have a good defensive-minded head coach, but you eventually find a good offensive coordinator like Dable, like he's always going to leave for a head coaching job because it feels like every team is trying to hire the next Eric Bieniemy or whoever, or like Mike McDaniel or whatever, right? Like those Kyle Shanahan, those guys keep getting jobs, whereas the defensive-minded guys, maybe not so much. So like you have 2 good seasons with Josh Allen and all of a sudden you're always gone. Whereas like if you're Andy Reid, like Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, unless Andy Reid gets fired, they'll always be together. So they're always working with each other, which is huge compared to like Sean doesn't work hand in hand with Josh, right? Like that's
maybe let Josh call the plays, give him 20 plays and say go nuts. I mean, that's what they did. I mean, that's what they did with Kelly back in the day, right?
Yeah, the K-Gun. Why not?
The game is just so much more advanced. Are you, like, what the hell are we talking about?
You don't think you can pull it off?
I think what gives me pause, like everybody's offense, but I think common knowledge, it often makes sense to zig when everybody else is zagging. Like, I don't mind McDermott being a defensive-minded head coach. Well-taken point, though, that if somebody comes in and absolutely lights the league on fire, they would be a strong candidate for a head coaching spot, for sure.
I mean, it's going to be fine. It's almost going to be impossible for them to find.
Unless the Bills keep winning Super Bowls, then they'll be like, oh, everybody else will be like, we need a defensive-minded head coach.
Yeah, yeah, true. It's possible. It's possible. All you need is a great defensive-minded head coach to go with your elite quarterback, and then they balance each other out, so you have the best of both worlds, right? Great, great, you know, play caller and defense to go with your amazing quarterback that can carry you as long as you have a halfway decent coordinator. Because if you think about it, if there's a good coordinator out there, like they're not going to come to Buffalo to also be a coordinator. Like that Eric Bieniemy move to the Commanders, that doesn't happen very often where a guy has success and then he goes to become a coordinator somewhere else also. That is not the case. We got to hope that there's like an offensive-minded head coach gets fired because he hasn't performed well and he just is ready, like a Doug Peterson, like sort of guy, you know, like that's waiting for his second job as a head coach, but he's a proven offensive coordinator. Like we need that sort of guy, or like, you know, or a guy like in the college ranks, like Dable was a guy in the college ranks that had a coordinator at the highest level, like Alabama, LSU, one of those guys, like kind of like Joe Judge or Joe Brady rather, and do that. So it's interesting. It's going to be fun to see where we go from here. So cool. Any other final thoughts before we end this this Ken Dorsey firing episode that is brought to you by the TwinSpire Sportsbook at DeLago, at the DeLago Resort and Casino down Route 90 on Exit 41 in Waterloo, New York, at the DeLago Resort and Casino. You guys good? Okay, awesome.
The future is bright.
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling better. We'll see. I'm still not great about this season, but I think I'm getting in that direction. We just have to, like we said in the podcast, we just have to focus on each game going forward. We will watch them because we're Bills fans, but we just won't be as emotionally invested. Like when they lose, and honestly, I kind of felt myself being this way at times this season, like emotionally detached. Like when I thought the Bills won last night and Will Lutz missed that field goal, and I thought the Bills had won, I was like, ha, I can't believe they actually freaking pulled it off, right? Like, it was more of a, like, it wasn't like a, yes, that's right. It was more like a, can you believe that? You know?
Oh, yeah, I definitely was like that, for sure.
You definitely
were. And then fell to the ground when I saw the flag.
Drop to your knees. Your wife's like, what was that, John?
Head in the hands.
To me, I feel like I've been emotionally detached this season because of how they've been playing the last 3 or 4 games. So
I get too emotional because like going into the game, I was thinking like, well, it doesn't matter if they blow them out or if they lose. And I could see either outcome happening. But to me, it wouldn't matter because it's the Broncos, and they still need to win all these other games. And if they don't look good, then, or even if they look okay and blow them out, it's like, well, what does that really mean? And this and that. But then, of course, as the game is going on, then I'm like, you know, just like any other game, I'm emotionally invested and emotions take over. So,
John, do you think you can watch the rest of the season and just not be as emotionally invested?
No.
No? Okay. It's not impossible.
I mean, even during the drought, right? Like, I mean, every game, they're like still, you know, like even at the end of the season, you're looking for like, you know, they're about to go 7-9 again. You're looking for like something that you can like hold on to for next year. Like, oh, that's starting to look better. So maybe if they carry that over next year and they get, you know, draft a guy like this, and then they can do that. Like, no matter what, you're so invested that there's always some optimism for something, whether it's for that season or for the next season.
What about you, Mike? Can you detach yourself emotionally from this team? Like a loveless marriage, just going through the motions, no lust, anything? Should I keep using analogies?
Sure.
I don't have any more. Go ahead. That's the key to happiness, though, for this season, because you don't want to be depressed. It's not fair to you, your family members, like the people around you. You know, it's not fair to them for you to be like just miserable all the time, because there's a good chance you're going to be upset this season. If you take this season with like, we can still definitely make the playoffs, you're going to be let down. It's all about expectations. That's the only way that, you know, you're going to try to reach some sort of happiness.
Super Bowl or bust, baby. Let's go.
We've talked about it ad nauseum, I feel, but like desire, it's just fundamentally desire is a contract you make with yourself to be unhappy until you get what you want. And like, what do we want? One Super Bowl? Or like, no fan base is happy with one Super Bowl. It's immediately the next year. So like, I'm trying to like, when they win, carry it till the next game, like just be happy about it. When they lose, hey, it's over, and look forward to the next one. It's certainly hard to do, but we enjoy getting on, talking about it with each other, watching game with family, friends, eating pizza. Like it's a fun time. So when they lose, forget it. When they win, use it. Would be my best case.
Yeah, exactly. Don't let it ruin Thanksgiving, all that stuff as it comes around. So thank you guys.
Luckily they don't play on Thanksgiving this year.
Finally. Finally. They have 6 primetime games. That's not one of them. Thank you guys all for listening. Appreciate you guys being a part of this. This was fun to discuss the Ken Dorsey firing and go into it in depth. So signing off for John.
Go Bills.
For Mike.
Go Bills. Those Super Bowl odds are looking real attractive right now.
And for me, Nate, go Bills, go Joe Brady, and we'll talk to you guys again next week.
Thank you for listening to the Circling the Wagons podcast. Download and subscribe to us in your favorite podcast service. Email us at ctwpod@gmail.com. That's Charlie Tango Whiskey Pod @gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter @ctwpod. And most importantly, go Bills!
Nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills.
Nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills, Nate.
Well, listen, the whole show is called Circling the Wagons. Say no more. I love it.
Just had to wait to do that right as I was signing off, John.
Sorry, I thought I was muted.
All those times you were laughing hysterically at what Mike and I were saying, completely muted. We could have used that laughter.
Well, that one review,
do laugh tracks.
That one review said that we giggled too much sometimes.
Oh, fuck that guy. Whatever happened with Eric Spoelstra, by the way, I don't think they got rid of him, didn't they? They kept LeBron, right? Obviously.
No, he's still there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. LeBron shut the fuck up and went back to play.
Oh, no kidding. I did not see that coming.
Sorry. I guess the story was not clear at all.
He said, you said where he said, I put my number on the table. He's like, fucking. And so, like you said, he put it all out there and, like, showed him who was boss. But I'm like, did that completely backfire on him?
He's never coached again in the NBA.
They canned his ass.